and a number of other executives. Our Q2 results were announced at about 3:00 P.M. Central Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question and answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please use the raise hand button to join the question queue. Before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thank you. So to recap, we saw large adoption acceleration in EVs, and then a bit of a hangover as others struggled to make compelling EVs. So there have been quite a few competing electric vehicles that have entered the market, and mostly they have not done well, but they have discounted their EVs very substantially, which has made it a bit more difficult for Tesla. We don't see this as a long-term issue, but really as fairly short term. And we still obviously firmly believe that EVs are best for customers and that the world is headed for a fully electrified transport, not just of cars, but also of aircraft and boats. Despite many challenges, the Tesla team did a great job executing, and we did achieve record quarterly revenues. Energy storage deployments reached an all-time high in Q2, leading to record profits for the energy business. We're investing in many future projects, including AI training and inference, and a great deal of infrastructure to support future products. We won't get too much into the product roadmap here because that is reserved for product announcement events. But we are on track to deliver a more affordable model in the first half of next year. Really, by far, the biggest differentiator for Tesla is autonomy. In addition to that, we have scale economies, and we're the most efficient electric vehicle producer in the world. So, anyway, while others are pursuing different parts of the AI robotic stack, we are pursuing all of them. This allows for better cost control, more scale, quicker time to market, and a superior product, applying not just to autonomous vehicles, but to autonomous humanoid robots like Optimus. Regarding Full Self-Driving and Robotaxi, we've made a lot of progress with Full Self-Driving in Q2, and with version 12.5 beginning rollout, we think customers will experience a step change improvement in how well supervised Full Self-Driving works. Version 12.5 has five times the parameters of 12.4 and will finally merge the highway and city stacks. So the highway stack is still, at this point, is pretty old. So often the issues people encounter are on the highway, but with 12.5, we finally merged the two stacks. I still find that most people actually don't know how good the system is, and I would encourage anyone to understand the system better to simply try it out and let the car drive you around. One of the things we're gonna be doing, just to make sure people actually understand the capabilities of the car, is when delivering a new car, and when picking up a car for service, to just show people how to use it and just drive them around the block. Once people use it at all, they tend to continue using it. So it's very compelling, and then this, I think, will be a massive demand driver. Even unsupervised Full Self-Driving will be a massive demand driver. And as we increase the miles between intervention, it will transition from supervised Full Self-Driving to unsupervised Full Self-Driving, and we can unlock massive potential in the fleet. We postponed the sort of Robotaxi or the sort of product unveil by a couple months, where it's shifted to 10-10, so the 10th of October. And this is because I wanted to make some important changes that I think would improve the robo-taxi, the main thing that we're going to show. And we're also going to show off a couple of other things. So moving it back a few months allowed us to improve the robo-taxi as well as add in a couple other things for the product unveil. We're also nearing completion of the south expansion of Giga Texas, which will house our largest training cluster to date. This will be an incremental 50,000 H100s plus 20,000 of our Hardware 4 or AI5 Tesla AI computer. With Optimus, Optimus is already performing tasks in our factory, and we expect to have Optimus production version 1 in limited production starting early next year. This will be for Tesla consumption. It's just better for us to iron out the issues ourselves. But we expect to have several thousand Optimus robots produced and doing useful things by the end of next year in the Tesla factories. And then in 2026, ramping up production quite a bit. And at that point, we'll be providing Optimus robots to outside customers. That'll be production version 2 of Optimus. For the energy business, this is growing faster than anything else. We are really demand constrained rather than production constrained. So we're ramping up production in our U.S. factory, as well as building the mega factory in China that should roughly double our output, maybe more than double, maybe triple potentially. So in conclusion, we're super excited about the progress across the board. We're changing the energy system, how people move around, how people approach the economy. The undertaking is massive, but I think the future is incredibly bright. I really just can't emphasize just the importance of autonomy for the vehicle side and for Optimus. Although the numbers sound crazy, I think Tesla producing at volume with unsupervised FSD, essentially enabling the fleet to operate like a giant autonomous fleet, and it takes the valuation, I think, to some pretty crazy number. ARK Invest thinks on the order of $5 trillion. I think they're probably not wrong. And long-term Optimus, I think, achieves a valuation several times that number. I want to thank the Tesla team for strong execution and looking forward to exciting years ahead.
Great. Thank you very much, Elon. And Vaibhav has opening remarks as well.
Thanks. As Elon mentioned, the Tesla team rose to the occasion yet again and delivered on all fronts with some notable records. In addition to those records, we saw our automotive deliveries go sequentially. I would like to thank the entire Tesla team for their efforts in delivering a great quarter. On the auto business front, affordability remains a top of mind for customers, and in response, in Q2, we offered attractive financing options to offset sustained high interest rates. These programs had an impact on revenue per unit in the quarter. These impacts will persist into Q3 as we have already launched similar programs. We're now offering extremely competitive financing rates in most parts of the world. This is the best time to buy a Tesla. I mean, if you're waiting on the sidelines, come out and get your car. We had a record quarter on regulatory credits revenues and as well. On net, our auto margins remained flat sequentially. It is important to note that the demand for regulatory credits is dependent on other OEMs' plans for the kind of vehicles they're manufacturing and selling, as well as changes in regulations. We pride ourselves to be the company with the most American-made cars, and are continuing our journey to further localize our supply chain, not just in the US, but in Europe and China as well for the respective factories. As always, our focus is on providing the most compelling products at a reasonable price. We have stepped up our efforts to provide more trims that have estimated range of more than 300 miles on a single charge. We believe this, along with the expansion of our supercharging network, is the right strategy to combat range anxiety. Since the revision of FSD pricing in North America, we've seen adoption rates increase meaningfully and expect this to be a driver of vehicle sales as the feature set improves further. Cost per vehicle declined sequentially when we remove the impact of Cybertruck. While we are experiencing material costs trending down, note that there is latency on the cost side, and such reductions would show up in the P&L when the vehicles built with these materials get delivered. Additionally, as we get into the second half of the year, it is important to note that we are still ramping Cybertruck and Model 3 and are also getting impacted by varying amounts of tariffs on both raw materials and finished goods. While our teams are working feverishly to offset these, unfortunately, it may have an impact on the cost in the near term. We previously talked about the potential of the energy business and now feel excited that the foundation that was laid over time is bearing the expected results. Energy storage deployments more than doubled with contribution not just from Megapack, but also Powerwall, resulting in record revenues and profit for the energy business. Energy storage backlog is strong. As discussed before, deployments will fluctuate from period to period, with some quarters seeing large increases and others seeing a decline. Recognition of storage gigawatt hours is dependent on a variety of factors, including logistics timing, as we send units from a single factory to markets across the world, customer readiness, and in case of EPC projects on construction activities. Moving on to the other parts of the business, service and other gross profits also improved sequentially from the improvement in service utilization and growth in our collision repair business. The impact of our recent reorg is reflected in restructuring and other on the income statement. Just to level set, this was about $622 million of charge which got recorded in the period. And I want people to remember that we've called it out separately on the financials. Sequentially, our operating expenses, excluding surcharges, reduced despite an increase in spend for AI-related activities and higher legal and other costs. On the CapEx front, while we saw a sequential decline in Q2, we still expect the year to be over $10 billion in CapEx as we increase our spend to bring a 50K GPU cluster online. This new cluster will immensely increase our capabilities to scale FSD and other AI initiatives. We reverted to positive free cash flow of $1.3 billion in Q2. This was despite restructuring payments being made in the quarter, and we ended the quarter with over $30 billion of cash and investments. Once again, we've begun the journey towards the next phase for the company with the building blocks being placed. It will take some time, but will be a rewarding experience for everyone involved. Once again, I would like to thank the entire Tesla team for their efforts.
Great. Thank you very much, Vaibhav. Now let's go to investor questions. The first question is, what is the status on the Roadster?
With respect to the Roadster, we've completed most of the engineering, and I think there's still some upgrades we want to make to it, but we expect to be in production with Roadster next year.
Great.
It'll be something special, like a Hall of Famer, I think.
Fantastic. The next question is about timing of Robotaxi event, which we've already covered. So we'll go to the next question. When do you expect the first Robotaxi ride?
I guess that's really just a question of when to expect the first, when can we do unsupervised full self-driving? It's difficult, obviously, my predictions on this have been overly optimistic in the past. So, based on the current trend, it seems as though we should get miles between interventions to be high enough that it should be far enough in excess of humans that you could do unsupervised possibly by the end of this year. I would be shocked if we cannot do it next year. So next year seems highly probable to me based on points simply plus the points of the curve of miles between intervention. That trend exceeds humans for sure next year. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Our third question is, the Cybertruck is an iconic product that wows everyone who sees it. Do you have plans to expand the cyber vehicle lineup to a cyber SUV or cyber van?
I think we want to limit product announcements to when we have a specific product announcement event rather than earnings calls.
Great, thank you. Our next question is, what is the current status of 4680 battery cell production and how is the ramp up progressing?
Yeah. 4680 production ramped strongly in Q2, delivering 51% more cells than Q1, while reducing COGS significantly. We currently produce more than 1,400 Cybertrucks of 4680 cells per week, and we'll continue to ramp output as we drive costs down further towards the cost parity target we set for the end of the year. We've built our first validation Cybertruck with dry cathode process made on our mass production equipment, which is a huge technical milestone, and we're super proud of that. We're on track for production launch with dry cathode in Q4, and this will enable cell costs to be significantly below available alternatives, which was the original goal of the 4680 program.
Great.
Thank you very much. The next question is, any update on Dojo?
Yeah, so Dojo, I should preface this by saying I'm incredibly impressed by NVIDIA's execution and the capability of their hardware. And what we are seeing is that the demand for NVIDIA hardware is so high that it's often difficult to get the GPUs. I guess I'm quite concerned about actually being able to get state-of-the-art NVIDIA GPUs when we want them. I think this therefore requires that we put a lot more effort on Dojo in order to ensure that we've got the training capability that we need. So we are going to double down on Dojo, and we do see a path to being competitive with NVIDIA with Dojo. And I think we kind of have no choice because the demand for NVIDIA is so high, and it's obviously their obligation essentially to raise the price of GPUs to whatever the market will bear, which is very high. So I think we've really got to make Dojo work, and we will.
Great. The next question is, what type of accessories will be offered with Optimus?
Optimus is intended to be a generalized humanoid robot with a lot of intelligence. So it's like saying what kind of accessories would be offered with a human. It's just really intended to be able to be backwards compatible with human tasks. So it would, you know, use any accessories that a human would use.
Thank you. The next question is, do you feel you're cheating people out of the joys of owning a Tesla by not advertising?
We are doing some advertising. So,
yeah, I'll say something. Our fundamental belief is that we need to be providing the best products at a reasonable price to the consumers. Just to give you a fact, in US alone in Q2, over two-thirds of our deliveries were to people who had never owned a Tesla before, and which is encouraging. We've spent money on advertising and other awareness programs, and we have adjusted our strategy. We're not saying no to advertising, but this is a dynamic play, and we know that we have not exhausted all our options, and therefore plan to keep adjusting in the later half of this year as well.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is on energy growth, which we already covered in opening remarks. So we'll move on to the next one. What is the updated timeline for Giga Mexico, and what will be the primary vehicles produced initially?
Well, we currently are paused on Giga Mexico. I think we need to see just where things stand after the election. Trump has said that he will put heavy tariffs on vehicles produced in Mexico. So it doesn't make sense to invest a lot in Mexico if that is going to be the case. So we kind of need to see where things play out politically. However, we are increasing capacity at our existing factories quite significantly. And I should say that the cyber taxi or robot taxi will be produced here at our headquarters at Giga Texas.
All right, thank you.
Sorry, as will Optimus towards the end of next year for Optimus production version 2, the high volume version of Optimus will also be produced here in Texas.
Great, thank you. Just a couple more. Is Tesla still in talks with an OEM to license FSD?
There are a few major OEMs that have expressed interest in licensing Tesla or Tesla Full Self-Driving. And I suspect there will be more over time, but we can't comment on the details of those discussions.
All right, thank you. And the last one, any updates on investing in XAI and integrating Grok into Tesla software?
Well, I should say that Tesla is learning quite a bit from XAI. It's been actually helpful in advancing full self-driving and in building up the new Tesla data center. With regarding investing in XAI, I think we'd need to have a shareholder approval of any such investment. But I'm certainly supportive of that if shareholders are. But I think we need a vote on that. And I think that there are opportunities to integrate Grok into Tesla software. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. And now we will move on to analyst questions. The first question comes from Will Stein from Truist. Will, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Great. Thanks so much for taking my question. And this relates a little bit to the last one that was asked. Elon, I share your strong enthusiasm about AI, and I recognize Tesla's opportunity to do some great things with the technology. But there are some concerns I have about Tesla's commercialization, and that's what I'd like to ask about. Specifically, there were some news stories through the quarter that indicated that you redirected some AI compute systems that were destined for Tesla instead to XAI, or perhaps it was to X, I'm not sure. And similarly, a few quarters ago, if you recall, I asked about your ability to hire engineers in this area, and you noted that there was a great desire for some of these engineers to work on projects that you were involved with, but some of them weren't at Tesla, they were instead at XAI or perhaps even X again. So the question is, when it comes to your capital investments, your AI R&D, your AI engineers, how do you make allocation decisions among these various ventures? And how do you make Tesla owners comfortable that you're doing it in a way that really benefits them? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're referring to a very, like an old article regarding GPUs. I think that's like six or 7 months old. Tesla simply had no place to turn them on. So it would have been a waste of Tesla capital because we would just have to order H100s and have no place to turn them on. So it was just, this wasn't a, let's pick XAI over Tesla. The Tesla data centers were full. There was no place to actually put them. We've been working 24/7 to complete the South Extension on the Tesla Gigafactory here in Texas. That South Extension is what will house the 50,000 H100s, and we're beginning to move the H100 server racks into place there. But we really needed that to be complete physically. You can't just
you know, order compute, order GPUs and turn them on with no, you need a data center. It's not possible. So I want to be clear, that was in Tesla's interest, not contrary to Tesla's interest. Does Tesla know good to have GPUs that can't turn on? The split second that South Extension is able to take GPUs, which is really just this week, we are moving GPUs in there and we'll bring them online. With regard to XAI, there are people that only want to work on AGI. So what I was finding was that when trying to recruit people to Tesla, they were only interested in working on AGI, not Tesla specific problems, and they wanted to start do a startup. So it was a case of either they go to a startup or and I'm involved, or they do a startup and I'm not involved. Those are the two choices. This wasn't they would come to Tesla. They were not going to come to Tesla under any circumstances.
I mean, I would even add that, you know, AI is a broad spectrum, and there are a lot of things which, you know, we are focused on full self driving as Tesla and also Optimus. But there's the other spectrum of AI which we're not working on, and that's the kind of work which other companies are trying to do, in this case, XAI. So you have to keep that in mind, that it's a broad spectrum. It's not just one specific thing.
Yeah, and once again, I want to just repeat myself here. I tried to recruit them to Tesla, including to say, like, you can work on AGI if you want, and they refused. Only then was XAI created.
I really appreciate that clarification. If I can ask one follow-up, it relates to the new vehicles that you're planning to introduce next year. I understand this is not the venue for product announcements, but when we think about the focus, I've heard on the one hand that the focus is on cost reduction. On the other hand, you also said that the Roadster would come out. Should we expect other, maybe more limited variants, like similar to the cars that you make today, but with, you know, some changes or improvements or different, some other variability in the form factors? Should we expect that to be a significant part of the strategy in the next year or two?
I don't want to get into the details of product announcements. And we have to be careful of the Osborne effect here. So, you know, if you start announcing some great thing, it affects our near-term sales. We're going to make great products in the future, just like we have in the past. End of story.
Great. The next question comes from Ben Kallo from Baird. Ben, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. When we think about revenue contribution and with energy growing so quickly and, you know, Optimus on the come, how do we think about, you know, the overall segments longer term? And then do you think that auto revenue will fall below 50% of your overall revenue? And then my follow-up is just on the last call, you talked about distributed compute on your new hardware. Could you just update us and talk a little bit more about that, the timeline for it, and, you know, how you would reward customers for letting you use their compute power in their cars? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said a few times, I think the long-term value of Optimus will exceed that of everything else of Tesla combined. So it's simply, you just have to consider the usefulness, utility of a humanoid robot that can do pretty much anything you ask of it. I think everyone on Earth is going to want one. There's 8 billion people on Earth, so that's 8 billion right there. Then you've got all of the industrial uses, which is probably at least as much, if not way more. So I suspect that the long-term demand for general purpose humanoid robots is in excess of 20 billion units. And Tesla has the most advanced humanoid robot in the world, and is also very good at manufacturing, which these other companies are not. And we've got a lot of experience with, the most experience, we're the world leaders in real world AI. So we have all of the ingredients. I think we're unique in having all of the ingredients necessary for large scale, high utility, generalized humanoid robots. But that's why, you know, my rough estimate long term is in accordance with the ARK Invest analysis of, you know, a market cap of on the order of $5 trillion for maybe more for autonomous transport. And it's several times that number for general purpose humanoid robots. I mean, at that point, I'm not sure what money even means. You know, in the benign AI scenario, we're headed for an age of abundance where there is no shortage of goods and services. Anyone can have pretty much anything they want. It's a wild, very wild future we're headed for.
On the distributed compute?
Yeah, distributed compute, that seems like a pretty obvious thing to do. I think where the distributed compute becomes interesting is with our next generation Tesla AI chip, which is hardware 5, or what we're calling AI 5, which is from the standpoint of an inference capability comparable to a V200, an NVIDIA V200. And we're aiming to have that in production at the end of next year and scale production in 26. So it just seems like if you've got autonomous vehicles that are operating for 50 or 60 hours a week, there's 168 hours in a week. So you have somewhere above, I think, 100 neural net computing. I think we need a better word than GPU, because GPU means graphics processing unit. So there's 100 hours plus per week of AI compute, AI inference compute from the fleet, from the vehicles, and probably some percentage from the humanoid robots, that it would make sense to do distributed inference. And if there's a fleet of, you know, at some point 100 million vehicles, with AI 5 and beyond, because you have AI 6 and 7 and whatnot, and there may be billions of humanoid robots, that is just a staggering amount of inference compute that could be used for general purpose computing. It doesn't have to be used for the humanoid robot or for the car. So I think, you know, that's a pretty obvious thing to say, like, well, it's more useful than having to do nothing.
All right, thank you. The next question comes from Alex Potter from Piper. Alex, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Perfect, thanks. Wanted to ask a question on FSD licensing. You mentioned that in passing previously. It was just wondering if you can elaborate maybe on the mechanics of how that would work. I guess presumably this would not be some sort of simple plug and play proposition. Presumably an OEM would need, I don't know, several years to develop its own vehicle platform that's based on FSD. I imagine they would need to adopt Tesla's electrical architecture, compute, sensor stack. So correct me if I'm sort of misunderstanding this, but if you had a cooperative agreement of some kind with another OEM, then presumably it would take you several years before you'd be able to recognize licensing revenue from that agreement. Is that the right way to think about that?
Yes. The OEMs do not move fast. There's not really a sensor suite. It's just cameras. But they would have to integrate our AI computer and have cameras with a 360-degree view. At least the gateway, like the what talks to the internet and communicates with the Tesla system, would that you need kind of a gateway computer too. So it's really a gateway computer with the cellular and Wi-Fi connectivity, the Tesla AI computer, and seven cameras, or enough cameras to get a 360 degree view. But this will, given the speed at which the auto industry moves, it would be several years before this you would see this in volume.
Okay, good. That's more or less what I expected. So then the follow-up here is, if you did sign an FSD licensing agreement with another automaker, when do you think you would disclose that? Would you do it right when you sign the agreement, or only after that multiple years has passed and the vehicle is ready to be rolled out?
I think it depends on the OEM. I guess we'd be happy either way.
It depends on, you know, what kind of arrangement we enter into. A lot of those things are, we've not ironed those out yet. So we'll make that determination as and when we get to that point.
Okay. And the kind of deals that are obviously relevant are only if, you know, some OEM is willing to do this in a million cars a year or something significant. It's not if it's like 10,000 or 100,000 cars a year. We could just make that ourselves.
All right, thank you. The next question comes from Dan Levi from Barclays. Dan, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking the questions. First, wanted to start with a question on Shanghai. You've leveraged Shanghai as an export center, really due to its low cost, and that makes sense. But maybe you can just give us a sense of how the strategy changes, if at all, given the implementation of tariffs in Europe, also to what extent your import of batteries from China into the U.S., how that might change given the tariffs. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I covered some part of it in my opening remarks, but just to give you a little bit more, just on the tariff side, the European authorities did sample certain other OEMs in the first round to establish the tariffs for cars being imported from China into Europe. While we were not picked up in our individual examination in the first round, they did pick us up in the second round. They visited our factory. We worked with them, provided them all the information. You know, as a result, we are adjusting our import strategy out of China into Europe. And, you know, one other thing to note is in Q2 itself, we started building right-hand Model Ys out of Berlin, and we also delivered it in UK. And, you know, we're adjusting as needed, but, you know, we will keep adjusting. We're still importing Model 3s into Europe out of Shanghai. And, you know, we are still evaluating what is the best alternate to manage all this. Just on the examination by the European authorities, like I said, we cooperated with them well. We are confident that we should get a better rate than what they have imposed for now. But this is literally evolving, and we are adjusting as fast as we can with this. I would also add that, you know, because of this, you've seen the impact that Berlin is doing more imports into places like Taiwan, as well as, you know, UK I just mentioned. So it will keep changing, and we will keep adapting as we go about it.
Great. And you,
thanks. Thank you. As a follow-up, I wanted to ask about the robotaxi strategy, and specifically the shareholder deck here notes that the release is going to be one of the gating factors is regulatory approval. So maybe you could help us understand, you know, which regulations specifically are the ones that we should be looking for. Is it FMVSS that's a standard? And then, you know, to what extent does the strategy shift you've done with FSD more of a nationwide, no boundary approach? Is the robotaxi approach one that's more geofence, so to speak, and is more driven by a state by state approach?
I mean, our solution is a generalized solution, unlike what everybody else has. If you see it, like Waymo and whatnot, they have a very localized solution that requires high density mapping. It's quite fragile. Their ability to expand rapidly is limited. Our solution is a general solution that works anywhere. It would even work on a different Earth. So if you rendered a new Earth, it would work on a new Earth. There's capability. I think in our experience, once we demonstrate that something is safe enough or significantly safer than human, we find that regulators are supportive of deployment of that capability. It's difficult to argue with if you've got a large number of, if you've got billions of miles that show that in the future, unsupervised FSD is safer than human. What regulator could really stand in the way of that? They're morally obligated to approve. So I don't think regulatory approval will be a limiting factor. I should also say that, the self-driving capabilities of this, that are deployed outside of North America are far behind that in North America. So with version 12.5, and maybe 12.6, but pretty soon, we will ask for regulatory approval of the Tesla supervised FSD in Europe, China, and other countries. And I think we're likely to receive that before the end of the year.
Thank you.
Which will be a helpful demand driver in those regions, obviously.
Thank you.
Just to add to that, Travis, in terms of as Elon said, in terms of regulatory approval, the vehicles are governed by FMVSS in the U.S., which is NHTSA, which is the same across all 50 states. The road rules are the same across all 50 states. So creating a generalized solution gives us the best opportunity to deploy in all 50 states reasonably. Of course, there are state and even local municipal level regulations that may apply to, being a transportation company or deploying taxis. But, as far as getting the vehicle on the road, that's all federal, and that's very much in line with what Elon was just suggesting about the data and the vehicle itself.
And to add to the technology point, the end-to-end network basically makes no assumption about the location. You could add data from different countries and it would just perform equally well there. There's almost close to zero US-specific code in there. It's all just the data that comes from the US.
Yeah, to that end, Ashok, it's we can go as humans to other countries and drive with some reasonable amount of assessment in those countries. And that's how you design the FSD software.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Thanks, guys. The next question comes from George from Canaccord. George, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions. Maybe just to expand on the regulatory question for a second. And I could be comparing apples and oranges, but GM canceled their pedal-less, wheel-less vehicle. And according to the company this morning, their decision was driven by uncertainty about the regulatory environment. And from what we understand, and again, maybe I'm wrong here, but the robo-taxi that has been shown, at least in the images of the public, is also pedal-less and wheel-less. Is there a different regulatory concern just if you deploy a vehicle like that that doesn't have pedals or a wheel, and that may that be different from just regular FSD on a traditional Tesla vehicle? Thank you.
Well, obviously the real reason that they canceled it is because GM can't make it work, not because of regulators. They're blaming regulators. That's misleading of them to do so, because Waymo is doing just fine in those markets. So it's just that their technology is not up to par.
And maybe just as a follow-up, I think you mentioned that FSD take rates were up materially after you reduced the price. Is there any way you can help us quantify what that means exactly? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've shared that we've seen a meaningful increase. I don't want to get into specific because we started from a low base, but we are seeing encouraging results. And the key thing here is, like Elon said, you need to experience it because words can't describe it till the time we actually use it. And that's why we are trying to make sure that every time a car is getting delivered, people are being showed how this thing is working, because when you see it working, you realize how great it is. I mean, just to give you one example, so again, there's a biased example, but I have a more than 20-mile commute into the factory almost every day. I have zero interventions on the latest stack, and the car just literally drives me over. And especially with the latest version, wherein, you know, we're also tracking your eye movement, the steering wheel lag is almost not there, as long as you're not wearing sunglasses.
Well, we're fixing the sunglasses thing. It's coming soon. So you will be able to drive. You will be able to have sunglasses on and have the car drive.
Yeah.
But there's the sheer number of times I've talked with smart people who like live in New York or maybe downtown Boston and don't ever drive. And then are asking me about FSD. And I'm like, you can just get a car and try it. If you're not doing that, you have no idea what's going on.
Thank you. The next question comes from Pierre from New Street. Pierre, please unmute yourself.
Hey guys, thank you for taking my question. So it's on robotaxi again, and I completely get it that with a universal solution, we will get like regulatory approval, we'll get there eventually, clicking up miles and compute, et cetera. And my question is more how you think about deployments, because I'm still like, I'm thinking once you have a car that can drive everywhere, that can replace me, it can replace a taxi. But then to do the ride-hailing service, you need a certain scale. And that means a lot of cars on the road, and so you need an infrastructure to just maintain the cars, take care of them, etc. And so my question is, are you already working on that? Do you have already an idea of what like your plan to deploy looks like? And is that like a Tesla-only plan, or are you looking at partners, local partners, global partners to do that? And I'll have a quick follow-up.
Yeah, this would just be the Tesla network. You just literally open the Tesla app and summon a car, and we send a car to pick you up and take you somewhere. We'll have a fleet that's, I don't know, on the order of 7 million that are capable of autonomy soon. In the years to come, it'll be over 10 million, then over 20 million. This is an immense scale. The car is able to operate 24/7, unlike the human driver. So the capability to, like, if there's this basically instant scale with a software update. Now, this is for a customer-owned fleet. So you can think of that as being a bit like Airbnb. You can choose to allow your car to be used by the fleet, or, you know, cancel that and bring it back. It can be used by the fleet all the time. It can be used by the fleet some of the time. And then Tesla would share in the revenue with the customer. But you can think of the giant fleet of Tesla vehicles as like a giant sort of Airbnb equivalent fleet, Airbnb on wheels. In addition, we would make some number of cars for Tesla that would just be owned by Tesla and be added to the fleet. I guess that would be a bit more like Uber. But this would all be a Tesla network. And there's an important clause we've put in every Tesla purchase, which is that the Tesla vehicles can only be used in the Tesla fleet. They cannot be used by a third party for autonomy.
Okay. And And do you think that scales like progressively, so you can start in a city with just a handful of cars and you grow the number of cars over time? Or do you think there is like a critical mass you need to get to be able to offer like a service that is of competitive quality compared to what like the like Uber would be typically delivering already?
I guess I'm not, maybe I'm not conveying this correctly. The entire Tesla fleet basically becomes active. You know, this is obviously maybe there's some number of people who don't want their car to own money, but I think most people will. It's instant scale.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Colin from Oppenheimer. Colin, please unmute yourself.
Sorry about that, guys. I've got two questions around energy storage. You know, with the tight supply and the stationary storage, can you talk about your pricing strategy and how you're thinking about saturation in given geographies, given that, you know, some of these larger systems are starting to shift wholesale power markets in a pretty meaningful way quickly?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we are working with a large set of players in the market, and, you know, our pipeline is actually pretty long, and there's actually a long end in terms of where you enter into a contract to where delivery starts happening. And so far, we have good pricing leverage, and I'll have Mike chime in on this too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of competition from Chinese OEMs, just like there is in the vehicle space. So We're in close contact with our customers and making sure that we're remaining competitive in where they're needing to be competitive to secure contracts to sell power and energy in the markets. We had a really strong contracting quarter and continue to build our backlog for 2025 and 2026. So we feel pretty good about where we are in the market. We realize that competition is strong, but we have a pretty strong value proposition with, you know, offering a fully integrated product with our own power electronics and site level controls. So,
yeah, and again, the aspect which people do not fully understand is that there's also a whole software stack which comes with our Megapack.
Right.
And that is a unique proposition which we have, which is only available to us. And we're using it with other stuff too, but that gives us a much more of an edge as compared to the competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, we find customers that they can sort of put together a hodgepodge solution, and then sometimes they'll pick that solution, and then that doesn't work, and then they come back to us.
Yeah, and we're not really seeing saturation for, like, on a global scale. There's little pockets of saturation in different markets, but we're more seeing that there's markets opening up given demand on the grid just continues to increase more than anyone expects. So that just opens up markets, you know, really across the world in different pockets.
Yeah, I mean, just even on the AI compute side, like these GPUs are really power hungry, and the amount of, you know, new pipeline which we're getting for people for data center backup and things like that is increasing at a pretty large scale.
Yeah. Thanks so much. And then the follow-up here is around the 4680. Process technology, you know, and the roll-to-roll process, you know, there's some news around your equipment suppliers. You know, can you talk about how far along you are in potentially qualifying an incremental supplier around some of those critical process technology steps?
Yeah, I can talk about that. You know, as you're probably referring to the lawsuit that we have with one of our suppliers. Look, I don't think this is going to affect our ability to roll out 4680. You know, we have very strong IP position in the technology, and, you know, the majority of the equipment that we use is in-house designed and some of it's in-house built. And so we can take our IP stack and have someone else build it if we need to. So that's not really a concern right now.
Yeah, I think people don't understand just how much demand there will be for grid storage. They really just, like, the people, I think, are underestimating this demand by probably orders of magnitude. So the actual energy, total energy output of, say, the U.S. grid is, if the power plants could operate at steady state, is at least 2 to 3 times the amount of energy it currently produces, because there are huge gaps. There's a huge difference in the from peak to trough in terms of energy or power generation. So in order for a grid to not have blackouts, it must be able to support the load at the worst minute of the worst day of the year, the coldest or hottest day, which means that for the rest of the time, the rest of the year, it's got massive excess power generation capability, but it has no way to store that energy. Once you add battery packs, you can now run the power plants at steady state. Steady state means that, you know, basically any given grid anywhere in the world can produce, in terms of cumulative energy in the course of a year, at least twice what it is currently producing. In some cases, maybe 3 times.
All right, thank you.
This is a very profound thing.
Thank you, Elon. The next question comes from Colin Langan from Wells Fargo. Colin, please unmute yourself.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my questions. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry. I guess I'm going to ask, you know, if Trump wins, there's a higher chance that IRA could get cut. I think, Elon, you had commented online that Tesla doesn't survive on EV subsidies. But wouldn't Tesla lose a lot of support if IRA goes away? I think Model Y, 3 and Y get IRA help for customers, and I think your batteries get production tax credits. So just one, can you clarify if IRA ends, you know, would it be a negative for your profitability in the near term? Why might it not be a negative? And then, you know, any framing of the current, you know, support you get IRA related?
I guess that there would be like some impact, but I think it would be devastating for our competitors, but and it would hurt Tesla slightly. But long term, probably actually helps Tesla. That would be my guess. But yeah, and I've said this before on these calls. The value of Tesla overwhelmingly is autonomy. These other things are in the noise relative to autonomy. So I recommend anyone who doesn't believe that Tesla will solve vehicle autonomy should not hold Tesla stock. They should sell their Tesla stock. If you believe Tesla will solve autonomy, you should buy Tesla stock. And all these other questions are in the noise.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add to this just to clarify a few things, that at the end of the day, when we are looking at our business, we've always been looking at it whether or not IRA is there. And we want our business to grow healthy without having any, you know, subsidies coming in, whichever way you look at it. And that's the way we have always modeled everything. And that is the way internally also, even when we're looking at battery costs, yes, there are manufacturing credits which we get, but we always drive ourselves to say, okay, what if there is no IRA benefit? And how do we operate in that kind of an environment? And like Elon said, we definitely have a big advantage as compared to our competition on that front. We've delivered it, and you can see it in the numbers over the years. Like, so there is, you cannot ignore the fundamental sides of the business. And then on top of it, once you add autonomy to it, like Elon said, it becomes meaningless to even think about the short term.
Okay. I think that's unfortunately all the time we have for today. We appreciate all of your questions. We look forward to talking to you next quarter. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Thanks.
All right, guys, give me a second here. Give me one second. We'll go through we'll go through the call and some takeaways after. If you didn't have a chance, we did cover already the earnings report, shareholder letter, things like that, the financials earlier today. That's also on the channel. Link for that is in the description. But we'll go through this call. I don't think anything too groundbreaking in here. I don't think anything too shocking. There are probably maybe a couple of notes, but probably a little bit less to go through here than we might normally have. Again, I think we're kind of just in a waiting period, both in terms of news and the financials and all sorts of things, until we kind of get to this next leg of the business, which hopefully involves more revenue, more profit from things like FSD, and of course next generation vehicle profits. But until then, I feel like we're kind of just not like treading water, because Tesla's business is, I think, doing better than that. But it's a little bit to an extent that needs to, you know, there's, and this is not unprecedented in Tesla's history. If you go back, there are multiple periods of time where Tesla's business has kind of stagnated, for lack of a better term, for a little bit, and then, you know, next leg comes. And that's just how sometimes businesses, especially long lead time, high capex businesses like Tesla's, that's just how it works sometimes. You're never going to have this consistent 50% growth every single quarter, every single year. Just not a realistic expectation to have. But as Elon said, you know, there's lots to be excited about in the future, but it is still in the future and will still be in the future for quite a while until we get there. But hopefully we do get there, and I think there's a lot of reasons to believe in the strategy and what Tesla is building towards. All right, so, you know, one of the things I talked about earlier, I was hoping we'd get a little bit more information on sort of costs. Tesla did say at one point here that the cost of goods sold for vehicles excluding Cybertruck did decline quarter over quarter. So that's positive. Obviously, we saw average selling price drop by about $750. The average cost of goods sold for vehicles did increase very slightly, but that was driven by Cybertruck, as we had mentioned, as a possibility or an influencing factor there. So not too surprising. Unfortunately, the drop is probably not super significant, not in the realm of $750 like we saw on the average selling price part, which is driving the automotive gross margins down, excluding regulatory credits, which were obviously quite high this quarter at almost $900 million. 12.5 we talked a little bit about before the earnings release came out, but as Elon had posted on X, version 12.5, which I think right now is only going to hardware 4 Model Ys, does have five times the parameters that it's evaluating versus 12.4. So hopefully, and it sounds like so far, we are seeing pretty good progress from 12.3, which in my opinion has been a little bit better than 12.4. I know it's a little bit hit or miss for people, but hopefully 12.5 is a pretty good step forward. I think Elon said that they're going to, you know, 12.5 will merge highway and city driving. I don't think that's quite happened yet, based on some comments from Ashok on Twitter, but it sounds like Elon is saying that will happen soon, or X rather, sorry. A little bit more on FSD here. Elon had also commented a bit on this just in a reply to somebody on X, but they postponed the Robotaxi event to October 10th, so we do now have a date. 8-8 now becomes 10-10, so we'll look forward to that. A couple of changes to Robotaxi and a couple of other things that they're going to show off. At one point later in the call, Elon, talking about the Robotaxi, did mention Cybertaxi. I think he's posted before about Cybercab, but it certainly seems to be leading in that direction. Someone asked specifically about sort of cyberized other vehicles, and Elon didn't address anything in terms of that question, just saying, you know, we'll wait for future product announcements. But it is still, seems to be some slipping in terms of the verbiage that's been used there a couple times, implying that it will be some sort of cyber type of vehicle. So I'm definitely curious to see that, you know, in a couple months now, or I guess 3 months now. Giga Texas, so talked a lot about the Southend expansion. It sounds like they're getting really close on that, probably this week, starting to install those GPUs. In the shareholder deck, they did show their expected capacity increase for H100 equivalents by the end of the year. Maybe one of the bigger things this call was doubling down on Dojo. I'm not sure where that is on the notes in here, but specifically being asked about that, Elon just saying that because the demand for NVIDIA GPUs is so high, which, I mean, you can see it in NVIDIA's margins, they're crazy, there should be opportunity there, not to discredit NVIDIA or anything like that. NVIDIA's doing amazing work. But with such high margins, that should allow an opportunity for someone to come in. And even if they're producing it at twice the cost of NVIDIA, they're still going to be able to give it to themselves, purchase it for themselves, use it in their own business for cheaper than what NVIDIA would be charging them, just because of, again, the high margins that NVIDIA is able to command right now. So hopefully that allows an opportunity for Dojo to kind of exist, even if it wouldn't be kind of at the level or at par with NVIDIA from maybe a cost perspective or a cost per performance perspective. It's still, their margins still allow room for that to be something that is actually a positive contributor to Tesla. So interesting. We've heard a lot of different comments over the years on Dojo, and Elon saying, you know, we have to double down. We don't really have a choice. And I think that's maybe in context of Robotaxi a little bit, but I think when Elon is thinking about it, he's probably thinking more in terms of Optimus. And sometimes people ask these questions of, like, Tesla has said that they're not compute constrained right now. Why do they need to continue to ramp up their GPU clusters and things like that? I mean, Optimus is a huge part of the reason why. And just as Tesla continue, like, they're not going to stop iterating on FSD just because they think it's close to being something that is capable of being unsupervised. They're going to want to go many steps beyond that. They're going to need to continue to train different models as they do that. So continuing to invest in that makes sense. And, you know, it's not solved yet. So with such a high value problem that isn't currently solved, even if they do think it's going to be solved, it's still worth making that investment, because even if you overinvest in it, you are pretty quickly paid back from the business itself. So not a huge deal to overinvest. Underinvesting, that obviously would have other implications. All right, I'm kind of just scrolling through the notes here. I'm not doing a great job of reading them, as thoughts kind of just pop into my mind. Optimus version 1, limited production early next year. Sounds like they want to ramp that up in production version 2 in 2026. I think we've kind of heard comments to that effect before. Nothing too crazy. Very excited about Energy. We talked about that earlier, but yeah, phenomenal quarter for Tesla Energy. I think they had a pretty profound comment, which I'll just kind of scroll down to here and try to come back to my where we were there in a second. But Elon said, like, not a lot of people understand this, saying the output of the current grid is like 2 to 3 times what is normally necessary, because you need to account for the biggest of spikes. Otherwise, you've got blackouts and whole host of issues. Battery storage allows both a couple of things. You can better utilize that additional capacity. It depends, like, how expensive that capacity is. There's all sorts of things that go into that, and it's very different based on what amount of capacity you're talking about, locations, all tons of stuff goes into it, very complicated. But being able to better utilize that capacity with batteries, because you can use that capacity to charge them when it's that power is not going to another use, and sometimes you can even see Tesla being paid to do that. To take that, because it's, you know, the inertia of the grid, it's just more cost beneficial to put that power somewhere than have to start and stop a power plant, something like that. So there are all sorts of effects here, and Tesla's with Megapack and other people that are doing battery storage, that just makes the grid stronger, more resilient, better utilized, all sorts of things. And if you think in the future, power demands are probably going to keep increasing. I mean, we're seeing it now with AI infrastructure. As those things happen, batteries will allow potentially less power capacity needed to be put online, because the power capacity is effectively being replaced by battery storage that can, you know, take advantage of the current capacity that we have now and just time shift it so that you don't have to build for an even bigger spike, because you've already got the Megapack, which, as we just went through, has so many other benefits. So as Elon said, that's really not well understood. And, you know, it's kind of like historically we've had all these Tesla analysts that have kind of been like automotive analysts, and they didn't really understand Tesla because of electric vehicles and Tesla software and supercharging and all sorts of other things that are not traditional to Tesla's or to the automotive business. You're going to see that same sort of lack of understanding with the energy business, right? Like, people that have done automotive analysis or maybe, other technology are not going to have great understandings of the grid and how it works and how to take advantage of that. But it is a core part of Tesla's business now. I mean, what was it, $3 billion in revenue this quarter, $700 million in profits. I should probably double check that. But yeah, that's in the ballpark of the numbers, $740 million in energy profit this quarter. You can't just annualize that because, as Tesla had said, it's something that is going to be a little bit volatile, and we've seen that historically too with the energy deployments. But if you were to annualize that, because eventually Tesla will get to this scale, you're talking about somewhere around, you know, $2.5-3 billion of gross profit each year. And Tesla's able to take that gross profit and leverage their fixed costs with the automotive business to an extent. So it really does become a pretty significant contributor to Tesla's bottom line already. And hopefully we're just in the very early innings of what this can be someday. So a lot to be excited about with energy, a lot of that becoming more and more visible as quarters go. Just since we're here, I guess IRA ending, yeah, it would be a pretty significant negative for Tesla in terms of profitability, like the analyst mentioned, both in terms of the EV tax credit, which I think most people think of initially, but there are also battery production tax credits there. There are also credits for solar, which not as big of an impact, obviously, but those solar investment tax credits, those also apply in some cases to energy storage, which I don't know as well in the utility space how that all comes through, but certainly on the consumer side, that's going to be a factor. And then whether you're talking about vehicles or you're talking about energy, the battery production credits, those are going to be benefiting Tesla right now, regardless of which business you're talking about. So there are things in there. There are regulatory credits. Obviously, not all of those are U.S.-based, not all affected by the IRA, but it is something that it would have a significant impact on Tesla if it were to stop. As Elon said, though, Tesla's probably in a position to be able to work through that. Like, the numbers, the financials are probably not going to look as good in the absence of that. But for others, not that their financials are at a level that is sustainable anyway, but you take the IRA away and it's just, man, not that I feel like there's a great path for them anyway, but it just becomes even more difficult. So that's where Elon is saying, not that I think that he necessarily wants that, but that's where Elon is saying that if it's more harmful to competition than it would be for Tesla, then that probably strengthens Tesla's competitive position. I feel like, you know, not that Elon necessarily wants that, because he's always wished the best for other EVs, other car makers, and wants them to make the transition as well. But I do tend to agree that it does make things more challenging for others than it does for Tesla, even though it does make things more challenging for Tesla. So hopefully that kind of makes sense. All right, let me try to get back to where we were here. 4680s. So I think pretty good progress updates there. So 1400 Cybertrucks per week. I think they said production had tripled. So obviously this peak production rate, or this average production rate, isn't so much higher than the 1,000 that we had heard before. I think maybe Tesla mentioned 1200 at the Q1 earnings report. I can't remember, but it sounds like the production is probably much more online than offline now, because I think they said in the shareholder letter that Cybertruck production had tripled, if I recall correctly, which is, you know, much more than this additional 400 trucks or whatever that we're seeing, suggesting that the uptime is quite a bit higher. And then on 4680s, the dry cathode, the previously they were just doing the dry anode, is my understanding of it. So with this, it hopefully is sort of, I don't know if it unlocks the full vision of what was presented with 4680s, but that's a huge part of what Tesla initially set out to do. And it sounds like they're pretty confident now that this will allow them to be significantly below other alternatives by the end of the year, which I know has been something that they have targeted. All right, so there's the Dojo stuff. Optimus, I mean, I think we've talked all about plenty about Optimus. Giga Mexico, no surprise that it's paused. I mean, we've all been able to see that for quite a while, and the reasons make sense, right? We, you know, this is a big year politically. Things need to be sort of firmed up there a little bit before you'd want to make any significant investment. Not that that's the only reason, because certainly Tesla is, you know, adjusting their strategy anyway as they kind of move into this next phase. Cybertruck, Robotaxi, or Cybertaxi or Robotaxi produced at Giga Texas. So while Optimus, I don't think that's anything new or surprising. OEM, so good question by Alex Potter on licensing FSD. I think a lot of people would be very excited about an announcement just in terms of the effect on what that might do for the stock. This probably diminishes that a little bit because as Tesla, as Elon said, it would probably take other OEMs many years to actually fully integrate and make this something that would be basically worth Tesla's partnership. It's going to need to be, you know, on the order of a million vehicles or so to really make it worthwhile for probably either for the OEM or for Tesla. So, and something like that would probably take them quite a lot of time. It's not quite as simple as just slapping some cameras on the cars and going at it. So, probably throws a little cold water on any sort of announcement if that were to happen. I still think it would be a very strong positive for the stock, but it's important to keep that in mind. The XAI situation, so Elon said, you know, there's literally nowhere for them to put the GPUs, so if it's a matter of you just release them back to NVIDIA and they sell them to another company, or if they get allocated to XAI, probably doesn't matter. Elon says this is actually beneficial to Tesla because obviously Tesla, in terms of being efficient with capital expenditures, you want to do that as close to the timing as possible for when you're actually going to receive the benefit of that. That's very sound business practice. Now, I know people will argue that that's not, Elon's not being truthful there or whatever, but if you just focus on the actual logistics of the situation, it's something that seems very logical to me, but everyone obviously free to make their own opinion on that. The talent stuff they've talked about before, don't want to talk too much about new products. Some more Optimus stuff, Hardware 5, which they've talked about scaling production of that in 2026. I don't think that's new. Distributed value of that hardware eventually, FSD licensing. So some of the tariff situations in Europe. So I remember, I don't know if this was like January or December, but shortly before the end of the daily part of Tesla Daily, we had talked about an article, I think from Reuters, that talked about how Europe was looking to crack down a little bit more on some of the EVs that were being imported from China. And it sounded like initially that was more of a look at some of the probably lower price point vehicles that weren't, you know, where Tesla was at. It sounds like now they are looking a little bit more at Tesla specifically, and that is probably going to have some repercussions, or is currently having some repercussions, and they're re-strategizing a bit around that. So probably something that's worth looking into a little bit more, and probably something that will also negatively affect Tesla's profitability, and maybe is already doing that a little bit this quarter. Tough to say, but obviously they're already sort of making some adjustments there with the right-hand drive vehicle production, as Vyabhav mentioned. FSD regulations, nothing too interesting there in my opinion. The 12.5 or 12.6 asking for regulatory approval in Europe, China. So I know there's been a lot of reports on that this year. I know in Europe there are some different parts of regulations that are under revision or under review, I guess. It sounds like maybe some of that stuff will happen later this year, but that would be very exciting. Obviously, that would be a really big deal if they could get that approval in some other countries. To take rates on FSD. All right. I think we probably missed a little bit in here as I was jumping around in the notes, but just trying to see if there was anything else too major. And then if anyone has questions, I'll try to just take a quick look. But hopefully we covered everything. Like I said, I don't think there was anything like super groundbreaking in either the earnings report today or in the call. I know the stock is down quite a bit. It looks like 7.5% right now, which I don't know what that puts us at. Let me just check quick. 227, 228. Obviously disappointing to see that, but we have had quite a run over the last month. I think we'll still be up, you know, I don't know, 25-30% in the last month. So definitely a little bit disappointing, but also a little bit understandable. As we talked about after the earnings letter came out, the 14.6% automotive gross margin ex credits falling 180 basis points quarter over quarter. Definitely a little bit disappointing, I think, especially versus expectations. So, you know, that's probably one of the bigger things that's dragging on things today. Obviously, there were higher restructuring costs than expected. Again, I hope they'd share a little bit more on that, on why that was, but I don't think we got too many comments on that. but that offset a little bit by regulatory credits being quite high. So at the end of the day, I think the lower earnings that we're seeing is probably a result mostly of the lower gross margins than expected. Hopefully, though, as we move through, we'll see. I think Tesla said something about kind of expecting, I don't know if it was better demand or better deliveries or something in the third quarter. So if we can continue to grow delivery capacity and Tesla continues to make progress on 4680 costs, Cybertruck costs, things like that, Model 3 refresh, hopefully that'll allow room for improvement a little bit, at least in the gross margins from this level. Although I don't think it's going to suddenly just jump back up to 20% or anything like that. So keep that in mind as well. And yeah, I think that'll mostly wrap it up. Again, I'll take a quick look here, see if I can just happen to see any comments. I don't have a great setup here for super chats, but I really do appreciate that a lot. We've got Klaus here. Stevenson 720, thank you. Appreciate that. I'm just looking for questions. It's a little tough format-wise, but I don't think I'm seeing a ton here. Oh, a couple more super chats. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. Hollywood KW. Awesome. Thank you. Someone asking what my thoughts are on the Cybertruck. Yeah, Cybertruck's great. I think I've always been very favorable towards the Cybertruck. I think I've always said that you got to kind of see it in person. It looks a lot different in person. I think most people are now coming around to that point of view, at least in the Tesla community. Maybe not more broadly, but yeah, it's something you got to see in person. Driving it is great. I think I had a very short experience driving it in around the Tesla shareholder meeting. Thanks, Don Warbeck, for letting me do that. But it was great. I love the responsiveness sort of with acceleration in electric vehicles. And I feel like the steer-by-wire adds sort of a similar responsiveness to turning in an EV. So you got like this instant response, both in terms of acceleration, you've got this instant response in terms of, steering. And it's just so both responsive and maneuverable, especially for such a big vehicle. It feels crazy in both of those ways. So it's awesome. I love the Cybertruck. I think it's great. I would love to get one. Doesn't make any sense because I don't drive enough and I live in Chicago, but otherwise I would very strongly be considering one. All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. It's always great to spend some time here talking about Tesla and spending some time with you all. So I appreciate it. We'll be back at some point at the latest next quarter for the Q3 earnings report, but we'll see what happens before then. I think the Robotaxi event would be a little bit before that if my calendar is correct, but who knows on that. So we'll see, but looking forward to it, and